Okay, good morning. Let's see. So once again, if you want to get the extra credit point from the cameras, please feel free to turn that on now. And let's see, the recording should be going now, and hopefully the computer will work today. So. All right, so the plan for today is to start looking at some more technical facts about derivatives. And the main idea is what's called the mean value theorem. Okay, and that's, I guess it's theorem 8.33 in Hunter, or 5.3.2 in the other text by Abbott. Okay. And it's, as I say, a little bit technical. The basic idea is the following. I'm going to start with functions that are both continuous and differentiable. So if we have a function f, and what I'm going to write is this, it's going to be in the space of differentiable functions, so d, a, b, which are also continuous, but on the closed interval. So notice that in the one case, I've used open parentheses, so for the differentiability, but for the continuity, I've used closed parentheses. And what this means is, F is a map that takes the closed interval to R, which is continuous at every point. And differentiable at the points where it makes sense, which is just in the interior points. Great. All right. So that's kind of the basic setup. That's the types of functions we're going to look at. And then what the mean value theorem tells us about those is that if we know something about what happens at the two ends, then we can say something about what happens in the middle. That's the basic idea. So in this setting, then information at A and B say something about what's happening in the interior. So give information about some interior point. And so the picture is we have our function, it might look like this. So it's continuous and differentiable, except that, of course, it doesn't make sense to talk about being differentiable at the ends, but everywhere else it is. And if we know something about, for example, the secant line here, that's going to give us a tangent line somewhere else. So that's the kind of thing we're looking for. And it has a lot of applications. Maybe I'll just list some of the applications that we'll do next time. Quickly, so for example, it gives us the Darboux theorem, which tells us, among other things, that this function that we looked at before is not differentiable. It's not a derivative. We know it's not differentiable, but it's not even the derivative of something. So that was a question we had, and we can answer that. We get the inverse function theorem, which says that if the derivative is not zero, then F inverse exists in, near C. All right, so the picture is that if I have a function, it might not have an inverse, but if, as long as the derivative is not zero, then at least near C, I can find an inverse function. Okay, so that's what it's going to give me. Let's see, we have antiderivatives, which is something you remember from Math 21. It was very helpful there, and it's going to be true more generally. It says that if we have that the derivative of f and the derivative of g are the same, then we know how they differ, right? They differ by at most a constant, and that's something we're going to be able to show. So g is equal to f plus c for some constant. All right, that'll follow from this. Another thing is going to be the Taylor-Lagrange theorem. So we get a whole bunch of stuff from this. So Taylor-Lagrange, this is how well do polynomials approximate our function. Polynomials are really easy to work with. So if they're good, then that's really helpful. So that's useful. How well do polynomials approximate a function? Okay, so that's the kind of thing we'll get out of the Taylor theorem. That's going to come up quite a bit actually throughout the rest of the course. Yeah. All right, and one other thing is, of course, already familiar to, but let me just mention it, and that's L'Hopital's rule is going to come out of this. Okay, so these are all sorts of things that we can get from this more technical material that that I'm going to talk about now. Okay, so let me just start then. So so for the mean value theorem, it's going to be sort of a series of lemmas, and so the first one is a theorem. And let me give the numbers. So this is 8.27. It's a theorem of Fermat. Actually, it also is 5.2.6 in the other book. All right, so that's our theorem. And it says the following. Oh, actually, let me just give it one more name. It's the internal extrema theorem. So the explanation, the title is longer than the theorem. So the theorem says the following. If we have a differentiable function, so we're not, so remember the class that we're going to look for eventually is these things that are differentiable and also continuous. This theorem is only, doesn't require that second condition. It just needs the first one. So if f is differentiable, okay, some differentiable function on an open interval, and it has a maximum or minimum, so f of m is equal to the maximum over x in this interval AB of the value of the image. Well, let me just write it this way, sorry. Let me write this, the maximum of the image of F, okay? Or the minimum. Then what we have is that the derivative, actually, can anyone tell me what the derivative should be if we're at a maximum or a minimum point? And the derivative exists?
Zero.
Exactly. So that's what we want to prove. And so the picture, of course, is something like x squared. And notice that it's defined on the open interval. So e.g. F of x equals x squared, and it's just defined from the open interval minus 1 to 1. So this one only has one of the two. It's got a minimum here at zero, but no maximum. So it has a minimum at zero, but no maximum. Okay, so since it's defined only on this open interval, it doesn't have to have a maximum and a minimum. Okay. But if it does, which this one does, then the derivative should be zero. Okay, so I hope the statement is clear. All right, so then let me try to prove that. So proof. All right, so we know that it's differentiable, so the derivative exists, so we can just compute it. F prime at M, we're gonna try to show that this is equal to zero, right? And what we know is by definition, it's the limit as X approaches M of F of X minus F of M divided by X minus M. That's always gonna give me the derivative. And what I want to do now is write it in two different ways. I'm gonna write it as the right and left limits, right? So both, if it's a limit exists, then the right limit and the left limit exist, and they're both equal to it. So this is, this is then equal to the left limit. So the limit as X approaches M, it's an arrow, approaches M, let's say from the right of F of X minus F of M divided by X minus M, same thing. And it's also equal to, maybe I'll put F prime of M here. It's also equal to the limit as X approaches M from the left of the same thing. Okay, so I hope that's clear. So that's just because the limit exists. Okay, but now I can work out the sign and then I'll be done. But if X is bigger than M, so that's gonna be this first case here. All right, so we're in the case where we're looking at a value of X that's bigger than M. Then what can I say about the sign of this ratio? You see that? So let's just look at so if X is bigger than M, then what's the sign of this denominator?
Positive.
That's right, this one's positive. What about the sign of the numerator? And why would I know the sign of the numerator here? So remember the hypothesis here is that this F of M is a maximum.
So the numerator is a negative sign?
That's correct, because this is the maximum here. And so this has got to be smaller, right? So you're taking the smaller thing and subtracting a bigger one. So this is negative and this one's positive. So the whole thing is negative, okay? All right, so let me just write that out. Since is less than or equal to zero, since F of M is a maximum. F of X minus F of M is less than or equal to zero. Okay, and so we're done. All right, so then that means that this first one here is less than or equal to zero. And similarly, if X is bigger than M, then this F of X minus F of M divided by X minus M is gonna be, this is still the same numerator, right? So this is still negative, but now the denominator is also negative. So this is gonna be greater than or equal to zero. Okay, so then we get that this limit is greater than or equal to zero, but now I have that F prime is bigger than or equal to zero and less than or equal to zero, so it's gotta be equal to zero. And let me decorate this a little more with some arrows. So this is what tells me that that's less than or equal to zero, and this is what tells me that that one is greater than or equal to zero, okay? Okay, any questions? All right, so that's the first step. All right, so, but the goal again was to talk about functions that are not just differentiable, but also continuous at the ends, okay? And I want to talk about the situation where I don't know whether there's a maximum. So I want to be a little bit more general. And so to do that, I'm going to make use of a theorem from last term. Let me just remind you of that theorem. So from 127a, we have the following theorem. I'm going to use a special case of it because it's all that we need. But this is a theorem 37. Hunter, or what is it? I guess it's 4.4.2 in Abbott's book. I guess my H's and A's look the same, but anyway, so those are the that's the theorem. And it says the following: if I have a continuous function, all right, so we've dealt with the differentiable. Now this is going to tell us something about the continuous one. So if I have f, which is continuous on some interval AB, and it's a closed interval, that's important here. So this we really want the closed interval here so that it's compact. Then and we do get a maximum minimum. So there are, let me call little m and big M for minimum and maximum with f of little m being the minimum of the image of f, and f of big M will be the maximum of the image of f. And once again, if I take an example like x squared, this time I'm on the closed interval, right? And so the maximum, so little m is going to be equal to 0 and big M is equal to 1 or minus 1. It need not be unique, but there's at least some big M that gives me the maximum and some little m that gives me the minimum value of my function. Okay, so this is f of x, just like the example I did a second ago, is equal to x squared. Okay, so that's my theorem. All right, so I hope that's something you remember from last term. Okay, and now what I want to do is combine this theorem with the one that we just finished proving to get the Rolle's theorem, which is the theorem we're headed for. So theorem, let me get the numbers right. So this is Rolle's theorem, and it's 8.32 in Hunter, and it's, which one is it? 5.3.1, I guess, in Abbott. Okay, and it says the following. So if we have, and now we're in the situation where we have both this, continuity and the differentiability, okay? Because I want to combine those two things. So if f is both continuous on the closed interval and differentiable, I should be putting zeros there. When I have just a C, I mean C zero, just continuous, on the open interval, okay? Okay, and I'm going to add one more hypothesis, which we're going to drop in the actual mean value theorem. So that extra hypothesis is that f of a and f of b are the same. That's true, for example, with my example up here. So this is an example that works. So if I have f of a is equal to f of b, okay, then there is some c in the interior here with the derivative at C equals zero. Okay, so that's giving us some information. All we looked at, all we had was data about the endpoints, and we got something useful about the interior. And so the idea here is that that zero is, well, the way to think about that zero is it's the slope of the secant line that runs through the points at A and B, because they are the same value, so you get a horizontal line. So that's got slope zero. And the claim is that we have some point C where the slope is also zero. So here's my C, here's my A, and here's my B. And so this has slope zero. Right? So that's the idea. So the thing, maybe I'll just write that in red here. So this is the slope of the secant line through A and B okay All right, and so, and this is going to be, of course, the slope of the tangent line. Okay, so that's the picture to have in mind, and then I can just write down the proof. Okay, so let's see, we're gonna make use of our two theorems. So first of all, we have a minimum and a maximum because our function is continuous on AB, so it fits the hypotheses here, from 7.37, so we can use that. So by 7.37, I can choose little m and big M with the properties that 7.37 guarantees, that is that f of little m is the minimum of the image of f, and f of big M is the maximum. Okay, so in this example up here, I can take them just as written here. I can take them to be 1 and 0, would be fine. All right, so now what happens if one of those is in the interior of AB? So case one, either little m or big M is in the interior, so the open interval AB. So if that happens, is it clear that I am able to use my other theorem and I'll be done? Let's see that. Let's see, sorry, did I, someone, x be less than or equal to m. Thank you, yeah, someone mentioned that a long time ago and I missed it, which I shouldn't have because it is true that I wrote it backward here. Here, x is bigger than m, and here I wrote it the same thing and I should not have. Thank you for catching that, I should have fixed that. So that should be, as noted, the other sign. Thanks. Okay. All right. yeah. Okay, right. So we're back over here again to looking at this case where the little m or big M, just like in this case, little m here is in the interior. So then what can I do to finish off the proof? All right, I'm trying to find some C with the derivative being zero. Okay. So if little m or big M are in the interior, then I claim I'm in the hypotheses over here. I have a function that's differentiable and I have the minimum or the maximum in that interior. And therefore I can just apply this theorem and I'm done. Okay, so that's all I have to do. So from our theorem 8.27, I take C equal to M or M, and we're done. So F prime of C equals zero. So, but they need not be, right? In this example here, we were lucky that one of them was in the interior, but the maximum one is not. So one of them was and one wasn't, so that would work. But what if both the maximum and the minimum are at the endpoints? That's the case we're left with, all right? So let me just write that out. So case two, if both M, little m and big M are among our endpoints. Okay, well, that's very restrictive, all right? And so that's the case that we want to deal with. Let's see. So f of little m is equal to one of the endpoints. Let's say it's f of a. It doesn't really matter, right? Because f of a and f of b are the same, right? That was our hypothesis here. And where to go? Hypothesis, f of a is equal to f of b. So whichever one it is, it's the same value, right? So this is then equal to f of b, all right? And that's also, and capital M is also one of those. So that's equal to f of capital M. So if I have a function whose maximum value and minimum value are the same value, what function must it be?
The horizontal line, right?
That's correct. That's the only possibility. It's got to be just a constant function, just a horizontal line when I graph it, okay? F is the constant function. Right, because when I graph it, it's got to be the same value at A and B, and that's the maximum and it's the minimum, so it never gets bigger or smaller than that. So it's, that's that. Okay, and what's the derivative of that? It's just the zero function everywhere. So, so C can be any point in AB. And we get the F prime of C is equal to zero. Okay, so it turns out that last case is easy to deal with because there aren't many functions that satisfy that. Okay, that's kind of the main technical thing there. Any questions about Rolle's theorem? All right, then let me finish off and use that to prove the theorem that we are aiming for, this mean value theorem. So, which again, it still seems a little technical, but I hope the advertisement at the beginning of the things we can get from it will motivate you to follow it for next time. So theorem 8.33, and this is the mean value theorem. And it's 8.33 in Hunter's book, and it's the next one, 5.3.2 in Abbott's book. Okay, so this is the mean value theorem. And it says pretty much what Rolle's theorem says. So if we have a function f, and again, it's going to be a continuous on the closed interval AB and also differentiable on the open interval. Okay, but this time we're going to drop the hypothesis that the two endpoints have the same value. Okay, and we're just going to get a conclusion. Then there exists C in this interval AB with F prime of C. Okay, well, this time it may not have anywhere where it's horizontal, but what we can get is that it's the same as this this term over here. This zero was actually the slope of the secant line, and that much is still going to be true. So instead of zero here, I'm going to write the slope of the secant line from A to B, and I'll just write out the formula for that. So that's going to be f of B minus f of A divided by B minus A. Okay, but instead of, but that now is the slope of the secant line. I'll write that out here. So this is the, again, the slope of secant line at A and B, all right? And again, of course, this, as always, is the slope of the tangent line at C. Okay, so we're now in a situation, if I draw a sketch of an example, we can have a function now that looks more like this. And so here I have A and here I have B. And that's unfortunately awfully flat, but let me try to see if I can draw a secant through here. Okay, so there's my secant line, and the claim is that that's got the same slope as some tangent line at a point somewhere in the interior, which is C. Okay, so that's the picture of what we get for this from this mean value theorem. Okay, any questions about the statement to the mean value theorem? All right, so then let me prove it. Okay, so we're going to try to use Rolle's theorem. And what we're going to do is we're going to take our function here and we're going to replace it. So this is f, and I'm going to replace it with some g that looks more like Rolle's theorem. Okay, so it's going to look more like a Rolle theorem like that. And the way I'm going to do that is just subtract a linear function from it. So so consider G, okay, and it's going to be just given by taking F, and then I want to subtract a linear function, so at this point has the same value at A as B. Okay, so to do that, I'm going to take a X minus A. So when I plug in A, it doesn't change at all. And then I want to put in the slope that I'm interested in. So this is going to be the slope of this secant line. So F of B minus F of A over B minus A. Okay, so this is once again, the slope of the secant line that I've stuck in here. All right, that's just a number. And this is then a linear function here that I've added. Okay, so that's my new function. All right, and then I want to check that this satisfies the hypotheses of Rolle's theorem. Okay, so we just have to check the thing. So if we go over here to Rolle's theorem, let's see. So to satisfy the hypothesis, it's got to be continuous and differentiable. And it's got to have the two endpoints being the same. All right, and then we're done. So let's see. So so G is in the intersection of the continuous functions and the differentiable functions. And that's because as we worked out earlier, both of those spaces, if you add or in fact multiply functions, they stay in those spaces since both are closed under addition. And multiplication by constants. Okay, and the two functions that we started with are, so F is continuous and differentiable, and linear functions are continuous and differentiable. So X minus A. Is continuous and differentiable. All right, so we took a continuous differentiable function, we took another continuous differentiable function, took their difference, it's still going to be continuous and differentiable. All right. Okay, so that much we got. And let's see, so that's one of our hypotheses here. Good, done. And then the second one is that the endpoints have the same value. Okay, and we tried to choose our linear function to have that property. Let's just check. All right, so then we compute. All right, so we have to, we want that G of A is equal to G of B, let's just compute it. So what is G of A? Actually, can anyone tell me what G of A is? If I plug A into this function, whoops, if I plug A into this function, what am I gonna get?
FA.
Exactly, the FA is there and this term is zero. So this whole thing just goes away, right? So I just get F of A. So this is equal to a F of A plus zero, in other words, F of A. And similarly, I can plug in B, and it's a little bit more complicated, but if I do it, I get the same thing. So I get F of B minus B minus A times F of B minus F of A divided by B minus A. Okay, and the B minus A's cancel. So I get F of B minus F of B plus F of A. In other words, I just get F of A back, right? Because these things cancel. And I'm left with F of A. Okay, and once again, the planning was that I adjusted my linear map so that it slid this down to the same height. That was how I chose my linear map to make it do that. Okay, great. So I've checked all the hypotheses over here for Rolle's theorem. It's in the right space. And the two endpoints have the same value. And so then I get the conclusion of Rolle's theorem. So by Rolle's theorem, there is a C with a G prime of C equals zero. Okay, that's what Rolle's theorem tells me. And so then I can go back and see what that tells me about the F. So I use compute. F prime of C is equal to, and let's see, G prime of C plus the derivative of this second function here. And actually, maybe I'll just do that in real time here. So what is the derivative of this complicated looking function? So the thing to remember is it looks more complicated than it actually is, right? Because this is just a number here, right? So this is
the slope.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the slope. And it's exactly that number, right? Because this x is going to give us a 1, that's going to give us a 0, and then we're just left with this constant here. Right? So just as you said, it'll be the slope, which is what we wanted. All right. So this is a plus, maybe I'll write it in two steps, the derivative of that function up there, x minus a times a complicated looking number, f minus b, f of a minus f of b over b minus a, but that's just a number. So then this is just equal to zero plus one minus zero times the thing we care about, f of b minus f of a over b minus a, right? Which is what we wanted. Okay, so we've proven the mean value theorem. Any questions about that?
Could you please explain why you write the gx function like this?
Why did I choose it, or why did it work? Why did I choose it?
I think you kind of rotate the fx function.
That's right? Correct. That's essentially what's happening. The way I picture it is I slide it down, but it's very similar to rotating. Yeah, so I picture that I keep this value here and I push everything else down by a linear amount. So I'll end up with something like this. So that's the way that I think about it. It's similar to rotating it until these two points reach the same value. That's right. Okay. So
could you please explain why you can write a gx function?
Why I can write it? Okay. So the thing is that I get to choose gx however I want. Okay. I can just choose gx. I get to do that. Now, so there's sort of two things going on. One is when I try to construct this proof, or actually I didn't, but the person who tried to construct this proof, when they did it, they thought, okay, they probably did a lot of back and forth until they figured out what G was going to work for them. Okay. And so that's kind of in the background. And now I'm actually just presenting the proof. So I'm saying, okay, from nowhere, from my hat, I'm going to pull this function. Okay. I can write down this function. And then I just have to check that it works. So I'm trying to convince you that the theorem is true rather than show you how you might have come up with that proof. Does that make sense? So I'm just sort of, I'm saying, you. Let's assume for some reason you decided to choose that act, that G, then it works. That's what I prove. Okay. And there is some intuition, and the intuition, as much as you said, you're basically trying to sort of rotate it until these two have the same level. And you want to make sure that that rotation you did is something you can control. And linear functions are something we understand derivatives of. So we have control. Okay, I'm going to do another example now and let you guys play with it a little bit in the chat room. So, and that's a generalization, which uses parametric setup like we talked about a couple times back. So if there are no further questions about the mean value theorem, then I'll go on to that. Okay. All right. So this is theorem. Let me see. Let me get the numbering right. So this is 8.53, which is 53, in Hunter's notes, and 5.3.2 in Abbott. And it goes by a various name. So this is the generalized or a parametric or the Cauchy mean value theorem. Okay, so it's a slight variation on it, which turns out to be handy for some of the applications I mentioned above, okay, including, for example, L'Hopital's rules, very good for that. Okay, so, and it goes as follows. So again, we have, this time we have two functions, so f and g, and we're gonna use them either as two sort of unrelated functions, or they're gonna be the x and y coordinates of a parameterization. So once again, we're gonna have them have the same hypotheses, so they're gonna be differentiable in the interior and continuous on the closed interval. I guess the other order, doesn't matter. Okay, then we're gonna say then there is, exists Z just like before, all right? So it's gonna be similar to what we had over here. So then there exists a C, okay? And again, we're gonna want something equal to a slope equal to a slope of a tangent thing equal to a slope of a secant thing. But now we have two functions. And so it's gonna come out as follows. And so with F of B minus F of A times G prime of C equal to F prime of C times G of B minus G of A. So switching the roles of F and G here on the right. Okay, so that's our claim. It's a little bit out of nowhere, but let me try to motivate it. So let me start with the picture here. All right, and so I wanna think of it as a parametric version of the mean value theorem. Okay, and so to make it look like a parametric version of the mean value theorem, I want to parametric equations. And so let me sketch a picture and then, so a parametric equation, remember when I graph a parametric equation, it doesn't have to look like a function, right? It can come back on top of itself like this. And so I'm gonna use my F and my G are gonna be the coordinates. So take G of T, X of T to be, let me do it in the same order that I had here, to be my G, and Y of T to be my F, okay? So I have here X of A and Y of A. And then I parameterize around, I keep parameterizing as T gets bigger, and maybe this over here will be my X of B, and this will be my G of B. And the idea is now I'm gonna look at the slope of a tangent line. Oops, that's supposed to be a line, kind of wavy, but anyway, the slope of that secant line is supposed to be the same as the slope of some tangent line here. Okay, so that's gonna be my point here, which is X of C, and Y of C, right? So that's my picture. All right, so let me see why that's related to what we have up here. So I'm gonna take X to be G and Y to be F. Then if X prime of C is non-zero, that's the case that we looked at previously. And delta X, so X of B minus X of A is non-zero. Then I can take this formula up here and I can divide through. I can divide by the G of B minus A and I can divide by the G prime. So let me do that. Then the conclusion above becomes, okay, so when I do that division, I'll get X prime, oops, sorry, I left out a prime here, sorry. I hope you can see what I just did. I forgot to write the prime over here. I should have, these two sides should just differ by switching the roles of X of G and F, which means that I forgot to write that prime there. Sorry, there it is now. Hope that's clear. Okay, so, all right. So then the above conclusion becomes that when I take the ratio of these, I get the same as the ratio of those. So it becomes that F prime, so Y prime at C divided by X prime at C is equal to delta Y, so that's Y of B minus Y of A, divided by delta X, so that's X of B minus X of A. Okay, and once again, this has the same situation that we were talking about before. This is the slope of the secant line right there. And this is the slope of the tangent line right there. Okay, so that's again what we had, just like previously. Okay. We only have 3 minutes left. So I guess I will write down the proof that I'm going to use, and then I'll do the proof next time. So the proof plan, and actually, I'll give you a few seconds. So proof plan, consider, so just like in the previous case, I considered a ancillary function that I just built, an auxiliary function, and I'm going to do that again. So consider f of h, let me say, of x to b, and it's going to be the change in f, so f of b minus f of a times g of x plus f of x times this change in G, so G of B minus G of A. And then I claim this fits this satisfies the hypotheses of the mean value theorem. Okay, so I took my two functions and I built one out of it. And that one function I claim is now going to satisfy these hypotheses for the mean value theorem over here. And then I'm going to apply the mean value theorem and do it. Okay, so I just have a couple minutes, but so I guess it's not time to put in chat. So maybe you can just answer or put it in the chat or think for a second. What do I have to check? If I want to do this proof, what do I need to check? So just like over here, right, I had to check some things. I had to check that it lived in here. I had to check this. So what do I have to check about this H to make this proof go through?
To check that h of a equals h of b, right?
Okay, so I would have to check h of a equals h of b if I wanted to apply Rolle's theorem. Right?
Are we applying the previous
version? Yes.
Okay.
I want to just apply this mean value theorem rather than going all the way back to Rolle's theorem. Right. So actually there's less that I have to check, right? So I don't know. Because the mean value theorem was a bit more general. So I just have to check it lives in the right space, right? So I have to do that again, right? So check H is in C0 intersect D1. So I have to do that. Then the next thing I have to check is that when I get an answer, I have to check that it's useful. So down here, when I got an answer. I got that g prime at c was zero. Then I got that f prime at c had the slope that I wanted. The only thing I have to check here is similarly, I have to check that when I get the slope that I want from here, that's going to give me the result that I want over here. Okay, so that's the second thing I have to check, and then I'm done. So check that, and if h prime at c is equal to what we're told that it has to be from the mean value theorem, so h of b minus h of a over b minus a, then the result that I'm trying to get holds. Right, so those are the two things that I have to check. Does that make sense? So I'm going to plug that into my previous theorem here, this mean value theorem, and then I'm going to check that the answer that I get from the mean value theorem gives me what I want, gives me the desired answer. Okay, and you can try that yourselves. I might even let you do that a bit of it yourself next time. Okay, so next time we'll finish that up, and then, as I said, starting on those hopefully tantalizing applications of this thing. Okay, and I'm going to stick around for a while, but I'm turning off the recording now and done with the lecture.